There are a lot of ways to do that, through your IRA or retirement plan, by gifting us life insurance, or through your donor-advised fund. We'd be happy to have a confidential discussion with you as you consider a planned gift to the station. Please reach out to us at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or call us at 202-588-0999. Thank you for considering becoming a part of WPFW.
I'm Winsome Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Turn it around. If we all could love one another, all the world could be as one. Just take time to love one another, all the world could be as one. Black man, white man, standing together, no more fighting to be done. Yellow, red man, dancing together, all the world could be as one.
And good morning. This is Joni. Welcome to Heal DC. Today is Monday, July 8th, 2024, and we are spending the hour today focusing on the corporatization of healthcare, the increasing corporatization. But before we jump into that, I want to just say for those of you who came out last night to the magnificent event, Roots Rock Reggae, or Reggae. A reggae event. It was quite something. It was wonderful to see all the listeners who appreciate WPFW. But again, today we're talking about the corporatization of healthcare. This discussion is a prelude to a special tomorrow, a radio forum tomorrow night, Tuesday, from 6 to 8 p.m. And the official title is Reversing Healthcare Access Crisis, the Crisis for Underserved in D.C., radio forum on Unity, healthcare clinics, and the D.C. jail. There are going to be healthcare providers on, community folks, and programmers. And so we'll be really digging into that tomorrow. But today, we thought it would be important to spend time on the underlying issue of how our healthcare system is getting increasingly, moment to moment, more and more corporate, and less and less focused on the patients. So we have two very magnificent and important physicians who will be with us for the hour, and we also have two patients. The two physicians, one is the president of the Union of American Physicians and Dentists, who is co-sponsoring. That union is the largest, the union that represents the largest amount of physicians in the country. And the union is co-sponsoring our special tomorrow. And the president's name is Dr. Bussey. He's calling in from California. We'll put him on in a moment. And our second physician is I'm going to call him our very own physician hero, Dr. Edwin Chapman. He has practiced in D.C. for over 40 years. Specialized in internal medicine and addiction medicine, graduated from Howard in 1973. The last 20 years, he's focused on the complex mix of addiction, untreated illness, infectious disease, criminal behavior, and chronic disease, which all these things contribute to shortening people's lives, particularly Black people, for at least 25 years. He is very involved with us in the community, and we're thankful to have him on. Our two patients, many of you may know both of them, Kimon Freeman, who is an activist with React Radio and much more. He's going to be telling his story of what happened to his sister due to inadequate care. And Pam Parker, who is a vocalist, and a union activist. Will be playing a little bit of her music as we bring them on in a few moments. But let's jump right into the first segment. We're going to be talking, sharing an overview of how healthcare is being corporatized with our two physicians. So let me welcome Dr. Chapman and welcome Dr. Bussey. Let's start with Dr. Bussey. He is new to our airwaves and he's calling from California. Dr. Bussey, if you can briefly tell us who you are and importantly, in a nutshell, how the healthcare system is being increasingly corporatized and how it impacts physicians. Are you there with us? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Greetings from California. It's a little bit early, but I'm really thrilled that you have me on with Dr. Chapman and the other two patients. As far as your questions, you know, I like to interchange the word corporate with industrialized. I mean, I feel both of them as a solo family physician for almost 40 years. It used to be just myself and the patient. The relationship was sacred, the doctor-patient relationship. But as in the other industrial revolutions that have occurred in this country, whether it's agricultural, assembly line, digital, middle managers and corporations inserted themselves into the mix of how to present a product, whether it was automobiles or threshing machines or healthcare. Now, in 2024, this has affected doctors in the fact that there's a third party, sometimes helping, but often interfering with that doctor-patient relationship. That has caused a lot of stress and confusion with the patients and the doctors. Patients, as far as who tells me what I can get as far as a medication, how long I can stay in the hospital, what kind of procedure. Is it the administrator or is it the doctor? There's a real conflict here. This is not just an automobile. We're producing a very important product, which is healthcare. And like you said, increasing people's life and happiness. So I see the insertion of this third party in the last 30 or 40 years when I first started here as slowly encroaching upon the professionalization of doctors and that sacred relationship between the doctor and the patient. And it's not good. That's my nutshell.
Absolutely. And what would you say is the main reason why this third party is sticking its nose into the system?
Well, we have almost $4 trillion, 4 trillion reasons for them to do that. That's what the amount of money used to be, small amount, but now it's like 18 to 20% of our gross national product is in some form of healthcare delivery, whether it's people who welcome you into the clinic, or the pharmacist, or whatever. There's so much money in it that in the 1980s, when I started out, you had the HMOs coming in and, quote, managing the doctors and managing healthcare. So in a nutshell, it's profit money for the people who haven't really, not the providers, the non-providers, who see this as an opportunity to, quote, manage care. And, they don't have the liability that we have as providers, but they do have the power. And our job as a union is to level that playing field and to restore the power to doctors and other providers. Money, that's the answer.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the reason.
Absolutely. And as some of us have been saying for decades, we need a healthcare system based on people and not profits. Right now, we have a system that is almost totally based on profits. We're happy to have Dr. Bussey on with us today, again, calling in from California. He is the president of the Union of American Physicians and Dentists, the union that represents the largest number of physicians and other health providers in the country. And his union is co-sponsoring with us at WPFW the special tomorrow evening from 6 to 8. So let's jump into one of my favorite healthcare heroes in the city, Dr. Edwin Chapman. And Dr. Chapman, you can tell us from your perspective the issue of corporatization of healthcare and how it continues to get worse, including some shocking news with the Supreme Court last week.
Yes, so thank you, Joni. It's ironic that you have coast-to-coast broadcast today. I'm on the East Coast and the doctor's on the West Coast. So we're in lockstep with one another. As a 1973 graduate from Howard, I've been in practice for almost 50 years in private practice. And just as he indicated, everything has changed and it's all about money and it's all about middlemen taking money for hedge fund investors and PBMs or farm benefits managers, people who have no liability, never see a patient, but it's a simple way of making money on the work that we do. So what we're seeing now is a trickle-down effect. It's really, if you look back at the economic system, it's what would be called Milton Friedman trickle-down economics in healthcare. And when we look at the overall outcomes, the United States spends the most money, but has the worst outcomes of any industrialized in terms of healthcare. And it's because of this. I just read an article yesterday, either in the New England Journal of Medicine or JAMA, showing that pediatricians, new graduates are not going into pediatrics. You can imagine that. When I came out of medical school, many of my colleagues went into obstetrics and gynecology. Again, they're under siege. And all of this is related to this corporatization of healthcare and the fact that pediatricians are paid the least amount, but have are often faced with patients on Medicaid who are in distressed communities, rural communities that need the most time and energy in terms of care, but they're not getting paid. So people are really moving away from those specialties, which is unimaginable. So when we look at what's happened with the now need to unionize for physicians, it's really the first step in fighting back as a provider community. Again, the community is confused, just as many providers are confused because there's so many hands in the till. And I think, as you mentioned, the Supreme Court just made some rulings that will actually remove federal agencies like the FDA and the Center for Medicaid and Medicare out of the formula. These are experts in terms of really determining quality of care and turning it over to judges. This Supreme Court has done several things that are going to radically change healthcare. They also ratified criminalization for being homeless. The Grants Pass Oregon determination. So it means that if you're poor and homeless, you're going to likely end up either in jail or the hospital where services are going to cost more or either dead. So we're really in a very, very dangerous conundrum right now in healthcare, and the community needs to wake up and fight back.
Absolutely. And as listeners, many listeners know that Supreme Court, many of the folks on that Supreme Court were appointed by Trump and Republicans, and they've taken over the court. So what Dr. Chapman just said is extremely important. This was rulings that just happened last week or the week before, very recent rulings. And also, it's important for people to know that, as many of you do, some of you don't, that despite the fact that we're the richest country in the industrialized world, we rank almost at the very bottom of life expectancy. I think we're number 38 now, and our life expectancy rate is going down. So these, along with other issues, are priority issues for us to be organizing around, and that's one reason why we're having this special forum tomorrow. In a few minutes, we're going to jump in with our patient representatives, but before we do that, do either of you, Dr. Bussey or Dr. Chapman, have any other comments before we hear from the patient side?
Yes, I just want to echo what Dr. Chapman said about judges and the law interfering with medical decisions. Out in California in the prisons, we've had a medication-assisted program. I know Dr. Chapman's involved in addiction medicine. They rolled out in the California prisons bupropionone, Suboxone treatment for opiate addiction several years ago. Our union very much wanted to be part of the decision-making on who would get this very important drug. And there's a receivership run by district court out in California. They're making the decisions. The staffing out in the prisons has been woeful for the last 25 years. The prisons were under an order to get at least a certain percentage of staffing there. And it's a sort of a volleyball game between the receiver and the judge. We've been fighting this thing for quite a while, this lawsuit. It's called the Coleman lawsuit. And when Dr. Chapman mentioned the judges getting involved in healthcare and the removal of the FDA, it's just harking me back to what's happening on a mega scale out and some of the addiction problems we're having in the prisons in California. So I agree with what Dr. Chapman said. Doctors have to take back medicine. It's their profession, not the legal profession, that should be making these decisions.
And it's not the banks either that should be in charge of health care. And we're going to be hearing a lot tomorrow about the situation with the D.C. jail, which has been a problem for quite a while. Okay, we're going to transition now into hearing from I'm calling them our patients, but they're also our activists. And Magic Mike, if you can have that song queued up. We're Jazz and Justice Radio. And one of our guests who's going to be talking about her son is also a vocalist. Many of you may know her, Pam Parker. She sings with the D.C. Labor Chorus, the Baltimore Labor Chorus, and much, much more. We're going to be playing a little bit of her song, Dreaming of a City by Peter Jones. And then we're going to be speaking with Kimon Freeman and Pam Parker, their perspective on the corporatization of healthcare. So let's hear that music.
Dreaming of a city where all of us have work to do. Paychecks every Friday and a home to go home to. A roof above our heads, a welcome mat at the door. I'm dreaming of a city where none of us are poor.
Okay, that is Pam Parker, Dreaming of a City, where none of us are poor. And as we know, poverty is a leading factor in poor health. And we're going to be hearing from Pam in a moment. These two people that many of you, again, know, they also are community heroes and leaders, are going to each talk about how they had a family member that died really as a result of poor health care. And let's start with our brother, Kimon. Good morning, Kimon. Is Kimon there?
Yes. It works better when you take off your mute button.
I'm calling on the phone. I think everyone can hear me. So good morning, Kimon. Oh, I see you had your mute button on. Yes. Glad to hear from you.
Yeah, it's an honor to be with you and also with Dr. Chapman and your other distinguished guests. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I'm always shocked when I meet people who don't know Kimon. It shocks me, but Kimon, in one sentence or two sentences, tell people who you are.
It's Kimon Freeman, angry black man in therapy, artist, activist, co-founder of We Act Radio on the radical side of Molokin Avenue, and also a D.C. statehood Green Party candidate for D.C. delegate to throw Eleanor Holmes Norton a retirement party in November.
Yes. So, Kimon, you have, of course, much to say about many things, but some people may not know about the story of your sister. If you can share what happened and how her death was really a result of corporatization of healthcare.
Well, first, let me point out the fact that we are in a nation's capital where this is the most dangerous city in all of America for a black woman of any socioeconomic background to give birth. We have the highest maternal mortality rate in the country, and we have a black woman as mayor, a black woman as congresswoman, even a black woman as the chief of police, but yet they're not addressing this crisis, and it's just it shouldn't be acceptable. The fact is, since the Columbia School of Women closed, DC General's closed, since the criminalization of midwives, assistant births in this city, but instead of addressing the highest maternal mortality deaths in the country, we have found our leadership advocating the military-industrial complex to name the first nuclear submarine after the District of Columbia. This is the problems that we have. Mm. I want to make sure we're aware of that. Now, today is July 8th. It would have been my sister's 51st birthday if she was still with us. If she did not confuse, as many people do, with health insurance and health care, they're not the same thing. Insurance is just that, insurance. They cover some things they won't. You may be left out in the cold with a thin sweater with insurance. We need health care. And what happened with my sister, she was in a car accident. She was T-boned. She wasn't seriously injured, but they did have to cut out the car because she was pinned. Her insurance stipulated that had she gotten to the hospital unconscious, they would have been required to do a full body examination on her. But because she was conscious when she arrived at the hospital, they was only required to provide care to her express elements. She was complaining of her shoulder and her neck. So they addressed that. She went home undiagnosed with a small fracture, a millimeter fracture into her liver. She was dropping like two or three drops of blood. Has she been examined, rather than the profit sharing, the profit cost effective approaches of the insurance company to say, well, why would we do a full body examination? Because 2 out of 100 only need it. So 98 out of 100 is unnecessary. So for the 2% it was, they're willing to deal with that. And she was a victim of that. So when she went home undiagnosed, a few months later, she collapsed in the home and she died on an emergency operating table. And when my family tried to sue, the insurance company threw everything at them, but the kitchen sink, including the kitchen sink, I should say. But there was a very ethical lawyer that told my mother that he could not, in good faith, accept her little $5,000 retainer fee if she wasn't prepared to spend $50,000, because that was what it was going to take to get them across the finish line and their day in court. And he warned her that even if she did that, and that even though she's right and he believes her to be right, that she could still possibly lose. And if she lost the case, the insurance company would then countersue her for more than $50,000 that they spent on their lawyers, and she could lose her house and everything she worked for. And this is how they keep the 2% out of their 100 quiet and silent about their suffering, and business as usual continues.
Oh, Kimon, tell us what year we were sending your sister blessings on the day that she was born. Tell us, what year was she born?
My sister was born July 8th, 1973.
1973, and what year did she leave us physically?
She left us. She left us in 2017. She was 44.
Well, we're thankful that you are sharing her with us. Say her name again.
Her name was Letitia Bryant.
Letitia Bryant, we applaud you, and we're thinking of you on the day of your birth. We're thankful you're on the air with us right now. We have time now, I think, to jump right into Pam Parker. And again, you just heard Kimon Freeman. Those of you who do not know Kimon, shame on you. he's an activist that you should know, does many things, and we're happy that he's here with us in this fight for health care for people, not for profits.
Thank you, Joni. But they can learn more from freeman4congress.com. Freeman4congress.com. Thank you.
Okay, and stay on with us, because we're going to, after we hear from Pam, and we're going to jump back with the physicians to make some comments. Pam Parker, welcome. You are also a treasure that we have here in Washington, D.C., as a singer, activist, vocalist. You will hear the end of your song, the whole song, at the end of the show. But tell us a little bit who you are and about your son.
I'm a retired electrician and a vocalist, as you mentioned, but I'm on to share about the tragic and unnecessary, I think unnecessary,
yes,
loss of my son, Damien.
Tell us a little more about you, Pam. Are you from Baltimore or are you from D.C.?
I was born and raised in D.C., right in the neighborhood. I was born in Petworth, near Mount Pleasant, that area, and I lived there for most of my life. I'm in Bethesda right now, but I'm from D.C.
Okay, and you are a union member, and you
And a journeyman electrician, but I'm retired at this point.
Yes, and you've recorded several albums, beautiful music. You sing with Lucy Murphy, Elise Bryant, and many others.
And by myself. I have a band.
Yes.
Yes.
Beautiful band. So, okay, tell us your son. What was your son's name, and when was he born?
His name was Damien. He was born June 10th, 1978. I'm only 16 years older, so we're very close. And I'm certain that the lack of care and indifference he suffered hastened his death at the end. He's been a diabetic since a child. He was type 1. And I'm also certain it was due to our profit-driven healthcare system. With all the advancements in science, we know that people can live for many, many years with chronic diseases. And technically, he died of chronic kidney disease. However, he was on dialysis, and we know that dialysis is often a sustainer of life. He shared like what a party it was whenever one of the dialysis patients would return from a hospital or nursing home after a successful treatment of, you know, the many complications they suffer. Most of the people Damien shared dialysis with were in their 80s. He was in his 40s. Damien was their surrogate grandson, and I can't describe the deep gasp and the painful howls that accompanied my telling them that he was gone. This was very recently. He died in January. Folks should know that D.C. has one of the highest rates of CKD, chronic kidney disease.
That's right. So, in the world. So,
yeah, I didn't know that.
I found that out recently. In the world, folks, and we've been saying this for decades, D.C. has one of the highest rates of kidney disease in the world.
Right.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Pam. Keep going.
No, that's okay. And if you don't have health care or you're homeless, as been mentioned, you have an even more impossible chance of surviving CKD. In Damien's case, even when you do have health care, things must happen perfectly for you in order for you to survive. You need a knowledgeable and strong advocate. You need a team of doctors who are motivated to fight for you. And oftentimes a community behind you. Still, it must make sense financially for them to keep you alive. And this system requires you to justify your life at often the weakest point. Then you must, put the scarce programs in place to cover the cost of extremely expensive surgeries and anti-rejection drugs. A kidney transplant is $500,000, for instance. One of the drugs for anti-rejection is $1,000 a month. So you depend on these programs, and they're charging the government. I'm not sure who they're charging, but somebody's paying it for it, if you're lucky. Damien was denied these drugs in the health facility he ended up in. They said they were too expensive. And so I was in the process of setting up hospice for him at home when we lost him. I bought him the anti-rejection drugs to the facility, and they said it was self-medicating. They would document everything to cover their own asses. Mm-hmm. Because my home doctor told me to do that. He said it was common that people would bring their drugs from home because these places often didn't cover them. There was, the hierarchy of skill was the cheapest possible. Most of the workers were low skilled and low paid aides. There was one nurse per floor, one doctor per facility. And he was often hard to locate, very hard to locate.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew they could get away with being cruel and dismissive because I called the police. I called the medical institutions that have known us for years and years. And, the police told me, for instance, well, unless bones are broken or you're bleeding, we can't take you out. But I suggest you leave. The care was awful. It was awful. And we did everything we could to move him and save him. But, you're not giving a kidney patient his anti-rejection drugs, alone. It could cause death. So, and this place, Collingswood, I don't know if I can say their name, but they have these fancy, glittery commercials still on television I have to look at. Every day. So anyway, that's my sad story. I just lost him in on January 27th, which is my younger son's birthday, ironically. So.
Wow. Well, and again, we're listening to Pam Parker. She's a treasure in our community, a vocalist, an activist, and we're sending her love and prayers on behalf of the loss of her son. And we know that we need to continue to organize to create a real healthcare system that's based on the people and not on the profits. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM, Jazz and Justice Radio. This is me, Joni. We're talking about the corporatization of healthcare today with our two guest physicians, Dr. Bussey from California and Dr. Chapman from right here in Washington, D.C. And we're joined also by Kimon Freeman and Pam Parker. Mikey, if you can play the PSA for that event tomorrow, let's hear it.
Greetings. WPFW presents Reversing the Mounting Healthcare Access Crisis for DC's Underserved, a radio forum on Unity Healthcare Clinics and the DC Jail, a special broadcast spotlighting the importance of community involvement and government support on Tuesday, July 9th, 6 to 8 p.m. Participants include Unity Healthcare providers representing their newly formed union, D.C. City Council members, community activists, and WPFW hosts. Produced in collaboration with the Union of American Physicians and Dentists, that's Reversing the Mounting Healthcare Access Crisis for D.C.'s Underserved, a radio forum on the Unity Healthcare Clinics and the D.C. Jail. Tuesday, July 9th, 6 to 8 p.m. on WPFW. building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
So that is tomorrow. We hope you can have your radio tuned on. Dr. Chapman will be with us, and Dr. Busey will make some comments. Kimon, we're going to invite you as well. We'll be having Roche Brown with me, Rhonda Hamilton, who is a community activist, and more. So that's Tuesday, tomorrow, 6 to 8 p.m., right here on the radio. So let's see what our physicians might have to comment about Kimon and Pam's story. Unfortunately, their stories are not unusual, and I know a lot of the listeners, and I know many of you out there have told me stories, even if you're a family member did not leave us, they suffered greatly, including a close friend who was one of the co-sponsors of this program, whose husband recently passed. She had the hell of a time getting any support for her husband in that facility. And it was very similar to what Pam was describing. But Dr. Busey or Dr. Chapman, do you want to comment or continue on where we left off?
Yeah, I'd like to comment on both of these cases. Brings up large issues on some of the weaknesses in our healthcare and what the corporatization has done for decision making. And I want to talk about Kimon's case. And Kimon, listen, if I was a DC resident, I'd vote for you, but I can't. I'm in California. I appreciate both of you. The ER, I want to talk about the ER. I used to work in the ER. The ER used to be a place where you could do what Kimon said that his sister should have gotten, which is a complete evaluation. Motor vehicle accidents are very tricky. And what he described, you know, laceration of a liver or whatever happened. Shoulder pain is a serious thing after a motor accident. It can speak to lung disease or anything in the internal organs. And this ER person was told or regulated not to do an investigation. That's professional judgment. You could say that's almost malpractice, that you're obligated to do a complete exam with a serious T-bone accident like you described. But the larger issue is how the ERs are flooded with people. And there are so many people using the ER. There's the primary care system is out. The ER, of course, is for this kind of a situation. But because of the fact that many people were probably in the ER that day for minor illnesses, that might have also been a factor why your sister couldn't have had a proper evaluation. That's number one. ERs are flooded. Number two is what the lawyer, the ethical lawyer, told your sister, which was, good luck. You're fighting against a ginormous insurance company, and you're in the malpractice game. Now, I'm a lawyer as well. I'm not active right now, but I've always fought for medical courts and professional jurors and taking the gamesmanship out of malpractice cases. And other states in this country have no-fault liability. In medicine, it's not that way. There's so much money for the plaintiff's lawyer and the defense lawyers that, the burden is put on the patient and the plaintiff to come up with this money. The premiums are so high that the evidence has to be overwhelming, and you have to be well-funded to get, you know, what our Constitution guaranteed, which is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And when I say life, that implies health care. But that's not in our Constitution. So that this comes into the whole issue of medical legal liability. And this issue is also the administrator's liability. But they're not in that chain of commerce. It's the doctor and the hospital. But what if there was a world, especially with you, Pam, where the administrator denied providing the medication, that indirectly or directly led to your son's demise? And so my dream has been to get legislation and bills to hook the liability on the people that make these terrible decisions. Why should it be the providers who are hamstrung by these policies? It should also be the administrators who make these policies that should be liable. And so that's what I jumped out about your son's death. I'm so sorry for your loss. And also Big Pharma, they're sitting there with billions of dollars. They could have easily provided that money.
Absolutely.
You know, to get the medication for your son. So these are the mega issues that are really causing these problems. The flooding of the ERs, the gamesmanship of medical malpractice, and, you know, the costliness of getting into that game. There are solutions to both. Medical courts, no-fault liability, and also ascribing liability to the people who make these terrible policies. So that's what my observations are.
Yeah, absolutely. You're listening to WPFW. We're focusing on the increasing corporatization of healthcare in this nation, richest nation in the world. This is me, Joni. We're joined by two physicians, Dr. Chapman and Dr. Busy calling in from California. Dr. Chapman right here with us in the community. And two activist patients, Kimon Freeman and Pam Parker. And I must say, Dr. Chapman has emphasized that tomorrow night, one of the things that will be discussed is the critical importance of community organizing to fight for the healthcare clinic, to fight for a healthcare system. And not only community activism, but in the case of D.C., D.C. government oversight. And we'll talk about that tomorrow. We have these Unity Healthcare Clinics. The D.C. mayor, not to mention all the city council, should be right up front dealing with what is happening to this system of clinics that serve the underserved. But Dr. Chapman, what would you like to say in response to the what Kimon and Pam said, or anything you'd like to say about what we can do to fight for a real healthcare system, not a system based totally on money?
So thank you, Joni. And I think we need to look at a satellite view of what's really happening. You'll see ads on the television over and over again for what's called Medicare Advantage plans. These are private health insurance plans that came into the market primarily to compete with so-called fee-for-service Medicare, which was the only thing available in the Medicare arena when I started practicing. And you also hear about Medicaid managed care organizations. Again, often private entities that are sold on the stock market. So when we look at the overall healthcare system, imagine 5 to 10% of patients spend 50% of the healthcare dollars. And most of those patients are in the Medicare or Medicaid arena. So let's start there. And who's on Medicare and Medicaid? Well, senior citizens who retired, and of course, with Medicaid, the poor, black or white. And so that accounts for the largest portion of our healthcare system. And what has happened is these companies have gone after these patients because they know that there's very little regulatory oversight in most markets and most states. So you can imagine they really fight over getting these patients. And the reason is because they know that they can play corporate games and make money or take back money or underserve and keep money and without any regulatory oversight. So that's the big picture. And we call that cherry picking and lemon dropping. there's an article in the New England Journal that describes this. So these companies are very good at picking patients with a top-of-the-line diagnosis like renal failure, but also getting those patients using AI and other methodologies to pick patients who are more compliant and that they're more likely to make money on, and drop patients or lemon drop patients who are difficult to treat, like a homeless patient or a patient who has a mental health diagnosis. So again, these companies have a lot of money. They spend a lot of money on our public health, our masters in public health, so to speak, our public health schools, and they train our public health officials in who come out and work in the states. In many instances, have been trained to enforce or support this system. So you come out, you get a job with one of these insurance companies, and you'll find a doctor works for that company in order to keep his job or her job, will go along with the program. So we fought for years to get mental health parity, to get substance abuse parity. But again, fighting that system is extremely difficult because you have doctors who work for the insurance company, and then you have regulators in the state who, the HHS Office of the Inspector General has shown that mm-hmm. they've done studies to show that out of 37 states studied, 25 had no regulatory oversight. So the company can come in, they can deny services, and there's no one there to fight. There's supposed to be several steps, at least four steps, to actually fight that system as a provider, as a patient, but most states do not have that system beyond an internal review by the insurance company itself. Classic example is United Healthcare. And United Healthcare has a subsidiary called Optimum Rx, which does the reviews, but they own that subsidiary. So it's like being the judge and the jury.
I need to jump in, and because we only have about 3 or 4 minutes left, I want to give a chance to everyone to have a final word. We have been fighting for universal health care in this country for about 125 years now or more. What can we do to build the movement and the community's involvement and the people's involvement to demand that we have a right to live? We have a right to health care in the richest country in the world. Let's hear the last one sentence from Pam, and then we'll go to Kimon and Dr. Boots. Pam, you're not real quick.
I would say educate each other, and for folks like me to jump in and phone bank or whatever you need me to do. I'm a rank and file person and ready to work.
Okay, and it's called organizing.
Organize, that's it.
Kimon, what is your final word of what we must do to really strengthen our movement for real health care in the richest country of the United States, in the world? Kimon, are you there? Well, maybe, is Kimon there? Can somebody tell me? Dr. Busey, what would you say?
I'd say we should form alliances with patient advocates, patient groups like Pam and Kimon and Dr. Chapman, and that's what we're doing at the unions, get all the unions involved. We're bargaining actually now with Optum Healthcare, which is a nasty group, and we need to have legislation to attach liability to these groups to get the Department of Corporations in every state to punish these bad practices and to ultimately find some way to expand what the Constitution says is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness to health care, because that's part of life. So this legislation and alliances is what I would do.
Absolutely. Can you hear me now?
Yes, Kimon. What do you think?
I want to make sure. I want to make sure that everyone knows that when we say that D.C. is the most dangerous city for a black woman to give birth in the nation, that is by design. They first criminalized midwives that was assisting births in the city. They closed so many hospitals in this city. The greatest, the number one cause for bankruptcy in America is medical debt. That affects everyone, everyone. And this is, you know, what did Martin King say, Joni, that injustice in healthcare is the most vicious? What was that quote?
Is the most inequities in healthcare is the most harmful and evil issue we're dealing with, basically. Dr. King said that in Chicago in the 60s at a national convention, a medical committee for human rights. Who that group was later put on the COINTELPRO list. And Malcolm X has a great quote, too, and I need to really record it, but it says, "If the difference between illness and wellness is we." And that means that we need to be organizing to demand that we have a right to health care in this richest country in the world.
Absolutely.
And Kimon, you know, we started this show in 1992. It was an outcome of fighting for the to keep D.C. General open. We had a large community group, and we turned it into a radio show. And we were saying these things that we created the show because of the horrific health care issues in this city. We have the worst outcome. Back then, we had the highest rate of infant mortality. We're not the highest anymore, but as Kimon said, highest rate of maternal mortality among all women. It's black women in the country. We need to organize around this issue.
Ms. Joni, thank you for doing this because I learned so much just listening to that. I did not know who was leading the world in kidney disease. So thank you for educating us on that. And I just want to make sure that your audience knows that right here in the nation's capital, there's a 20-year life expectancy difference between your zip codes. Right here in the same city, a 20-year life expectancy difference based upon your zip code. This is life and death. And our elected officials are representing us, but they're not serving us, and we need to address that. And again, this is Kimon Freeman, Freeman the number 4, congress.com. Thank you all for going to change this system.
That's right, and this is why we created this particular show to heal D.C. many, many decades ago. And we still have the same issue. We want to thank our wonderful engineer, Magic Mike. Thanks to
Mike. Hey, Joni, I'm sorry. I forgot to mention the Alliance for Retired Americans. It's a national group working on health care, and I didn't mention it.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Unfortunately, we used to have them on all the time. They will no longer take a position on a universal health care the way they used to. So, unfortunately, yes, that's good to know, but we need to do a lot more work. They've personally told me they could no longer speak out in favor of universal health care. But thank you, Pam, and thank you, Dr. Busey, for calling in from California.
Thank you.
And we'll hear from you physicians tomorrow as well, together with hopefully Roche will be on, and Ambrose may jump in, and Rhonda Hamilton, who is a community activist, again tomorrow from 6 to 8, we can hear the PSA again real quick, and then we will go out listening to the entire song of Pam Parker's Dreaming of a City Where Healthcare Can Be Free. So join us tomorrow, 6 to 8 p.m.
Greetings. WPFW presents Reversing the Mounting Healthcare Access Crisis for D.C.'s Underserved, a radio forum on Unity Healthcare Clinics and the D.C. Jail. A special broadcast spotlighting the importance of community involvement and government support on Tuesday, July 9th, 6 to 8 p.m. Participants include Unity Healthcare providers representing their newly formed union, D.C. City Council members, community activists, and WPFW hosts. Produced in collaboration with the Union of American Physicians and Dentists, that's Reversing the Mounting Healthcare Access Crisis for DC's Underserved, a radio forum on the Unity Healthcare Clinics and the DC Jail. Tuesday, July 9th, 6 to 8 p.m. on WPFW. building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
In 1899, Edward Kennedy Ellington ranks as the greatest all-around figure, composer, arranger, orchestrator, bandleader, conductor, piano accompanist, soloist, and musical thinker. On Thursday, July 11, from 5 a.m. until midnight, WPFW honors Ellington on the occasion of his 125th birth year with Ellington 125. A celebration beyond category. We will tickle the sonic keys with all things Ellington, from his three-minute instrumentals to his theatrical scores and sacred concerts, all in support of building our relocation fund. That's Ellington 125, a celebration beyond category. Thursday, July 11th, from 5 a.m. until midnight, on WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I testify.
Sophie's Parlor is the original woman's radio collective. Wednesdays from 3 to 5 p.m., the best music divas on radio at 89.3 FM and sophiesparlor.blogspot.com.
Hey, Chris Garlock here.
And I'm Elise Bryant.
Tune in Thursdays at 1 p.m.
for the Labor Heritage Hour Hour.
Every week, we explore labor arts and culture.
As anarchist Emma Goldman said so famously, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution.
And that's how we feel about labor music, films,
theater, poetry,
labor history, labor art,
spoken word, basically anything that brings labor and the arts together.
So, join us for the Labor Heritage Power Hour
here on WPFW 89.3 FM.
Your station for jazz and justice.
That's the Labor Heritage Power Hour.
Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m.
The heart and soul
of the American labor movement.
PACA, Pan-African Community Action, will be holding the Community Town Hall, The Harm of Crime Bills, and the Future of Community Power in Chaka City. On Saturday, July 13th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., D.C. residents are invited to discuss how the Secure D.C. Crime Bill targets the black working class and criminalizes our youth, and how to develop real people-centered solutions to community safety. There will be speakers, group exercises, lunch, and a performance by the Afro-Go-Go Roots Collective, Crank Lukongo Unplugged. The Harm of Crime Bills and the Future of Community Power in Chocolate City, Saturday, July 13th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the RISE Demonstration Center, 2730 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast D.C. More information and registration can be found online, PACA, that's P-A-C-A, primebilltownhall.eventbrite.com. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
The Pacifica National Board and the WPFW Local Station Board will be voting on a proposed Pacifica Bylaws Amendment between July 10th and August 24th of 2024. Information on the amendment about how vacancies are